I think when we hand autonomy to our creations, that we give it a choice, a free will choice. My first book was called Out of Control, and it was about the fact that we are creating systems that are potentially out of our control. I actually think that, like our children, we have to release our creations at some point. And like our children, they will kind of drive us crazy with the fact that they may at certain times make the wrong choices that are hostile or harmful to others. But that's really the only way we can get the best of them. That's the only way we can get them, our creations, to surprise us. So if we want robots that in some ways will do things that we can't do, we have to allow them to make wrong choices. And in some senses, we have to allow them the possibility that they will harm us.
Well, even a few months ago, they talked about robots that would lie to you.
Yes.
Who wants a robot who would lie to you?
Well, you want a robot that will lie to you because that's the only way you're going to get one to tell the truth. So, I mean, you know, I mean, that's the kind of God dilemma, the dilemma of making things that have any kind of power. You have to give them the power to abuse as well as the power to use. If something's not really powerful, a technology is not powerful unless it can be powerfully abused. And so I think the two go hand in hand, and I think that's what we have to kind of realize.
You see, though, we touched on this, if society gets too dependent on this kind of technology, and then something happens, let's say an X flare from the sun takes out the grid and we don't have a power system, we can't live. We can't go back to the ways, you know, that our grandfathers and grandmothers used to live. We can't do that.
Right. And so I think because these kind of flares are sort of almost, we can almost agree that they're going to happen sooner or later, we actually have to prepare for ways in which we can have something, some form of communication that operates when these flares come. So we're smart enough to actually make redundant systems. We're smart enough to have something that won't die. It may become affected. It may get ill. I mean, we're never going to get rid of computer viruses. The best you can do with computer viruses is make an immune system where you keep them to some minimum.
Right.
And so I think we can anticipate for the fact that we're going to have plagues. They're going to come. What you want to have is you want to have backup systems. You want to keep them to a minimum. So we are going to have problems. In fact, one of the things that we realize about the technium is that most of the problems we have today are technogenic, meaning they're made by previous technologies that we've invented. And that also means that most of the problems we're going to have in the future are going to be caused by new technologies that we make. That's just the nature of technologies. They do produce new problems.
What is fueling the growth, Jim Gardner?
Well, there's a dynamic at work here that strikes me as so analogous to biological evolution. It's the classic, what biologists call an arms race, where the tiger gets stronger and then the antelope gets faster. And on and on, you ratchet up essentially the evolutionary process. That very phenomenon, I think, is occurring in what Kevin was just describing, where you have perhaps computer viruses getting more clever, and you have to counter that with having more clever defenses against them, and then they in turn become yet cleverer. So that process of it's almost a struggle for survival. It very Darwinian.
Yeah, we also call it the arms race. And so there is a sense in which the arms race, we also, in the biological term, they call it coevolution, meaning that the two species are so entwined in their advance and adaptation that it's almost as if it's one unit that's evolving, and they kind of need each other to keep going, and they're spurring each other to evolve faster. And that's where we are with technology. We're kind of co-evolving with technology. The more we make, the more stuff we make, the more we have to respond to it. The more we respond, the more we have to make. And that's what's driving this increasing acceleration.
Well, what's incredible too, Kevin and James, it's happening on all fronts. It's happening in computers. It's happening in video games, which, of course, live on computers. But it's every aspect of this technological era we're in that is rapidly growing.
And you know, it's true that that acceleration can be frightening and very, very uncomfortable. I mean, what's happening, of course, is that the world that we're making around us is accelerating. And by accelerating, of course, we mean that we're seeing 100 years change in 10 years, and then we're seeing 100 years change in 1 year, and then, you know, maybe a minute. And while that is sort of zooming up kind of vertically like a rocket, we're not changing that fast. Our bodies are accelerating faster than they were before, but they're not changing that fast. And so we feel this kind of tension, this pressure, this gap forming, and it can really worry us.
And I see too, our young people, for example, are deep into this technological advancement. I mean, they're into computers, they're into these smartphones, they know what to do. They're geniuses when it comes to technology, where, you know, lots of folks who are up there in age, some of them probably don't even have computers.
It's true. We think that they're adapting, but we're not. I'm not convinced that they are. I mean, they certainly are at more ease with us. But I think actually, you know, it takes us about 4 or 5 years to learn how to read and write. And I think to gain that kind of literacy with print and text, I think it's actually going to take us an equal number of years to really master this technique, this new platform that's coming up, where we're connected to everything all the time in everywhere, and that I think will require a deliberate practice, not just kind of by osmosis. You can't learn to read just being around words. You can't learn calculus just sort of hanging around numbers. You actually have to have deliberate practice, and I think we're going to have to actually deliberately practice how to survive, how to master this new technium coming around.
What happens with this technium when they start telling us we want to get you chipped because we want you to just wave your hand over a cash register or to come into a building or something
that? Yes.
What do we do when it gets that advanced and it's close?
Well, you know, I think that there are going to be some set of people who will say, under no circumstances will I or my children or descendants ever alter anything in our genes or any implant. And there are going to be other people who will say, yes, sign me up tomorrow. I'm ready. If I get a discount for getting an implant, I'm going to do it. And we know already that, you know, people do almost anything for a discount. And I think that we're going to see is kind of forking. I think we're going to see a plurality of different paths, which I think is what is evolutionarily kind of given. I mean, we see this in evolution. There's this forking, there's speciation, there's increasing diversity, and that wouldn't surprise me to see that in our own species.
You agree with that, Jim?
I do. I think it's I use the phrase the virtual Cambrian. And, you know, the Cambrian explosion is when 500 million years ago all of the complex multi-celled animals came out of essentially single-celled animals. I think something very much like that is going on right now, and that we're birthing really a new kind of kingdom of life, if you will, which Kevin calls the technium, but it's really a very large macro stage in evolution, very much like the Cambrian was.